9:30, and you'll get a 5-minute warning. Okay, hey, hi. My name is Ray. I'm a compulsive overeater, laxative, bulimic, anorexic. Hi. Thank you for asking me to speak. I gave up my favorite dance class this week, so you know. Some of us know how challenging that can be, okay? So I'll just lead with that. But there's always another dance class. That's what I've learned. And that I don't have to be perfect. That's a big one. Okay, so some numbers, because people love to hear numbers. But my numbers aren't going to be the ones you guys want to hear, but I'll tell you what they are anyway. Okay, so I've been in this program 35 years, over 35 years. In May, I celebrated 35 years of abstinence. Thank you. Now, what that means. Okay, so my abstinence, because I come from excessive dieting, binging, restricting, over-exercising, laxative bulimics, laxative bulimia. And so my disease, if I am up 30 pounds, that makes me want to kill myself. I don't need 100 pounds on me. I've been going to this meeting in the afternoon. Sorry, dudes, it's for women only, but it's online. And the women who are in that meeting, most of them are 100-pounders, if not most, at least half. And I'm talking more than 100 pounds, you know, and these are the people who Zoom is fantastic because they don't feel that they're going to be judged in those rooms, and they're not. And I was feeling weird because I was like, oh my God, there's all these 100-pounders and I'm like willing to kill myself over 30 pounds. Like, what is that? You know? And then I thought that is my thing of not being enough. It's not being enough. Like, the idea that I am willing to kill myself over 30 pounds means that I deserve a seat in this room, right? And so, so when I came in '88, I was in my field of choice. I was married, or I was engaged to the person I'm married to. That's another number. We've been together 42 years. So, like, you know, God bless us. And like, really. And it's good. Like, I love my marriage. I love being married. I love my husband. Thank God I chose a good guy. So when I was coming in, we had been together for 7 years because we met when we were young, and I was so concerned about getting into my wedding dress. How was I going to look okay down the aisle, you know? And I had long red hair, and I was like super cute and didn't know it, and all the stuff, you know? And I was at my perfect weight. I was at my perfect weight. I was a size 4. And I was just like, yay me. But I knew I couldn't keep it. So that's what I've discovered in this program, is that fear underlies everything I do. Fear is, I'm afraid of not getting what I want, or I'm afraid of losing what I have. And so that's like, if I can break it down to that, that's everything in my life. I'm either afraid something's going to be taken away from me, or I'm not going to get what I want. So what I wanted to talk about today, because so many of you know my story, it's not terribly interesting. It's like everybody else's, you know, praying for cancer, praying to be homeless. You know, homeless people are thin, people with cancer are thin. Like, literally, this is what would go through my head, you know. And I'm not kidding. You know, that's how bad it was. And I can laugh at it now because it's crazy shit. But at the same time, sorry, I didn't mean to swear. I'm giving up swearing, too. And I love people who swear. I love them. But it's not good for me because it becomes a tick. So I can't do it as much as I want to. So what I want to talk about today is, what are you working on? Okay, because this is the thing. I was at this meeting. It's an all the things meeting. And I said to, and I was like, you know, so today I'm working on, and this woman, when she shared after me, she goes, you know what I love about us? We're always working on something. We're always working on something. We're not stuck. You know, I had a father who was a rager. Is he responsible? No. Did he contribute? Yes. So he would rage. And then he would apologize every day. Every single day he would apologize to me for acting like an insane person, because he was insane when he was in his rage. And then he would say, but this is just the way I am. I never say that ever. I don't say this is just the way I am. I say, you know what, God, I don't want to rage anymore. I don't want to scream at people. I need help. And it came up recently because I experienced a re-triggering of some sexual trauma. And what happened was I didn't say anything at the time. It happened 3 times. I didn't say anything. I pretended it wasn't happening. It doesn't matter. It was reignited. And what came up was I froze as a child. I pretended to be dead when my father would come into my room. I'd pretend literally to be dead. And so... I never heard about freeze. I heard about fight and flight. So I always felt very guilty about not doing anything. And so my brain created this idea where I'm going to fight every time somebody gets in my way. Every time they're not wearing a mask in a grocery store, I'm going to go after them. Literally follow them around the store. Tell them what they're doing wrong. Like, this is what I was doing during COVID. Okay. And then I was like, and I'm yelling at my husband, and that's not good. And then I was like, you know, God, I want to cease fighting everything and everyone. That's what I want. I want to cease fighting everything and everyone. We have a neighbor next door. They're not living there. They're doing construction. There's a bunch of guys living there illegally. It's fine. I don't care. However, they brought a rooster in last week. Roosters do not just crow in the morning. They crow literally all day long, right? So I go over there, and I'm like, hey, dudes, like, I'm okay with you living here, but this has got to stop. And they're like, yeah, it's going in a few days. I'm like, oh, okay, when's a few days? And they don't give me an answer. So I talk to the owner because I see him, and I'm like, so what's the deal? And he goes, oh, those are for a cockfight. And I was like, oh, so when are they leaving? And he's like, they're going to Mexico in 2 days. I was like, okay, cool, fine. And I didn't, like, get into it with them. Like, this is illegal. You know, like, I would get my high horse. You guys have taken up our entire street for 2 years with your construction. There's noise all. None of that. I didn't want to get in a fight. And I'm thinking, maybe I should bring some beers over to those guys. And I'm like, that's a step too far. You know? That's a step too far. I don't need to people please them. But, you know, so I was really psyched about that. And then my husband, I was upset with him the other night, and it was right before he was doing an event, and I was like, okay, he's freaking out, and I'll give him a pass. And all of a sudden, it was like in my chest, in my ears, I could feel it, and I just said, come on, God, how important is it? Do I need to say something, or can you take it away? Done. And, you know, like, if it's a big deal, I'm going to say something to him, but it really wasn't. That's why those slogans are so important for me. How important is it, right? So that's one thing I'm working on. I'm working on getting rid of swearing because it's a tick for me, you know? And my husband swears like a sailor, and he's got the filthiest mouth. And he'll say to me, you're swearing a lot. I'm like, you're telling me? Oh, crap, it must be bad. So there's that. And then there's also speeding around. I'm like a crazy person in traffic. You know, like, I'm okay in my life, and then I'm screaming in traffic, and I'm like, you know, giving people a finger, and I'm like, I'm going to get killed. That's basically what's going to happen. Somebody's going to have a gun, and they're going to follow me off the freeway, and they're going to kill me. Because I know that happens, and yeah, it'll happen to me. But so to prevent that from happening, what I've been told is I can bring God in the car with me. I can offer God a seat in my car right next to me and go, hey, you're going to get me there on time. I'm going to give this over. Like, this morning, there's a whole thing going on with my dog, but I thought I was going to be late for this meeting, and I was just like, and that makes me be very angry in traffic. If I feel late, it's that thing I'm not going to get. That brings up my fear. I'm not going to be safe. Somebody's going to get mad at me. That's when my brain goes into override and I can't think straight. So I'm like, and then all of a sudden I'm just like, oh, God's in the car. It's yours. I don't literally give the wheel because that would be insane. But I do say, this is on you now, you know, and you'll get me there. And I got here, and I didn't know where I was going, and Alex shows up, and I'm like, okay, thanks, God, right? So that's how I want to work my life these days. I want to slow down. I'm not in a hurry anymore. I don't have small children where I have to be at their school at a certain time, and I have to be at work at a certain time, and I don't work for schools anymore. I don't have to be at a certain time. I don't have to get my kids to buses anymore. I actually have time. But I have this thing, I've got to be on time. And so I'm working on that. I'm working on it. And so I say to God, just let me be in the car. Why is there music in the car? Oh, I know, to distract me from this crap that's going on around me. That's why there's music in the car, you know. And if I can focus on the things that make me happy in the car, because there's nothing I can do. If I'm late, there's nothing I can do. I can call. If I'm going to be 10 minutes late, I will say, I'm really sorry, but I'm always on time. That's the truth. I'm always on time because I'm like an insane person around time. But I'm letting it go. I'm letting it go. And so you're like, well, what, where's the food? What's she talking about? Why is she talking about this crap? You know, what's going on? And the truth is, this is the stuff I ate over. Being afraid of people. I have tremendous fear of people. You wouldn't know it when I speak in front of you, but I mean, I actually have a business that helps people with their fear of speaking because I understand it in like the most basic way. But what I've learned is, what I'm here for is to pass on what I was so freely given. It's not about me. It's not about, I need to hit it out of the park. You know, like that's what I used to say. Like, make this great, God. Make this a great share. Now it's like, you just tell me what to say. You just tell me what to say. And yesterday when I was thinking about that, I was like, what are you working on? That's a really good one. And I was like, okay, that's what I'm going with. So that's the intuitive thought. So for me, getting to abstinence now. So my abstinence is not my food plan because I didn't know how to feed myself when I came in here if I wasn't on a diet. So I had to learn how to eat. I thought three meals a day with nothing in between would work. Well, I have hypoglycemia, so that didn't work. I have to eat every 3 hours. So sorry, it doesn't work. So my food keeps changing, and now that I've been here so long ago, and this was around menopause, which is crazy because out there they'll tell you when you hit menopause, not you guys, but the ladies in here, you're going to gain weight, you're going to have all this fat on you, you're not going to... Total freaking lie that they have been telling us forever. And my sponsor, who's older than I am, is like, complete and utter lie. Just a lie. And so when I went through menopause, I lost weight. I was like, what's going on? I didn't want to eat as much. Like, all the myths that I'd been told all those years, gone. The only thing I have is osteoporosis because I didn't do a great job with my bones, you know, when I was dieting all those years. So I have osteoporosis. And what I can do is when my friend calls me freaking out that she just, because I was like, you haven't been scanned and you're 60? And she's like, yeah, I got to get scanned. And she's got osteoporosis. And she was so happy that I'd been through it. Because I was like, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. This is what your doctor's going to recommend you do. This is my doctor. Go with God. And so I have a sponsor who told me sometimes the only reason we go through stuff is so that we can tell somebody we got through it. So that's why I'm here talking to you, because I was a garbage eater who was going to kill themselves over 30 pounds. I ate mustard and lettuce as my binge foods. I'm not a cake person. I'm not that person. And so my sponsor has to be somebody who understands my disease, because I don't eat sleeves of Oreos. I would never allow myself that. I would rather kill myself than eat a sleeve of Oreos. But a couple heads of lettuce with mustard, yeah, I'll do that. That's fine. So what I'm saying is I was a quantity eater. I never knew when I was hungry. I never knew when I was full because I messed with that part of my soul. And after being in these rooms all these years and doing the work, I know when I'm full. And it doesn't take a lot. It's kind of amazing to me. So I don't have to diet. I don't have to think about it. You know, like people who knew me back in the day are like, you're eating French fries? I'm like, yeah, they're delicious. Who knew? Who knew? You know? And I'm like, and another thing that I learned, and this is just for me because I understand my disease is different, but when you come from eating like lettuce and lemons and peppers, you know, it's kind of cool to start eating real food. And yeah, there was a guy who... He's an anorexic, and I always tell him part of my program is I never take seconds, because if I'm taking seconds, I'm not paying attention to my first, and I'm thinking about thirds. That's my brain. I know this. So I have to stop it first, and I leave a bite for God because I heard that from somebody I didn't particularly like in program, but I heard it, and I was like, love you. You're my new best friend. So because what she said was, if you haven't gotten it by that last bite, you're not going to get it. I was like, good to know. Totally true. So my stuff is behavioral, but my abstinence, my food plan is behavioral. My abstinence is, am I showing up every day for my program? Am I showing up every day? Am I working my steps? Am I calling my sponsor? I work my steps every day. I don't call my sponsor every day. I try to get to a meeting in one of my, I'm in two programs. I get to a meeting since Zoom. I've talked about 99. I've done like 700 and 700, you know, like, and it's been really good for me because it's like, oh, and then I meet all these 100 pounders who are not 100 pounders, they're 300 pounders. You know, and like I said, these people don't go out in the world because they're so afraid of being judged. And so to see these beautiful women open up and just know that we're the same, we're the same. It just shows up differently. And, you know, I have a great respect for this disease. I've had a friend who committed suicide in this program. I know people who've died of heart attacks, diabetes. Some of you know my son almost died from this. And he's doing really well, which is amazing to me. Not in program. It's not for everybody. It just isn't. I don't impress it upon anybody. If you want it and you want to work it, be my guest. And, you know, and I sponsor and I am sponsored. And so just what a typical day looks like, because I know people always want to hear about that. So a typical day is I wake up and the first thing I do is 30 minutes of meditation. And that started because I had terrible insomnia. So I would just meditate because I was up all night. So I'm like, well, I might do something. And that started my journey. So, like, thank you, God, for giving me meditation. I don't know that I would have started had it not been for that. And then for insomnia. So what happens is I say everything I'm powerless over. That's the first thing I do during the meditation. So food, body, traffic, speeding in my head, in my brain, swearing, you know, all the things I'm working on. And then I say, I know I can be restored to sanity. Because it tells me I can be restored to sanity. Not all the time, but most of the time I'm fairly sane. And then I say, please, I'm going to turn my will and my life over to your care. Please guide my thoughts and actions throughout the day. And please stay with me throughout the day. So I've kind of done a 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 11. Now I'm doing a 12 today. You know, so and I do a 10 step every night. And I have the serenity prayer wrapped around my arm. So what I have is I wake up with God. I have God throughout the day. Bring God into the car with me. Go with God at night. Because I can't just do one and done. I'm not that person. I forget so quickly. So I need to check in and go, okay, God, this doesn't look like enough food at all. So can you let me know that that's going to be enough? And then by the end of the meal, I'm like, done, you know? I don't know how that happens. It can only be a miracle. It's the only way I can describe it. The fact that I haven't been on a diet. I don't want to take laxatives. I don't want to diet. I don't want to take drugs that are out there, which, believe me, I would have been on them 100%. I'm not judging anybody who's on them. They're just not right for me. A friend of mine is on one of them. And when she was talking to me about it, I was like, thank you for the information. I'm good. You know, like I can listen to that. It used to be so triggering. And now I'm just like, whatever. I don't care. Like, if you need to do that for your recovery, go with God. It's not good for me. I can't eat anything light, diet, non-fat, less fat. Like, I can't do that. I had somebody in program. I was frantic in a store. This one dressing, and they're out of it, and I don't know what to do. And she's like, sweetie, why are you eating non-fat? And I'm like, she said, you don't need to do that. I said, no, I do. Why would I add calories? What's wrong with you? Why would I do that? It's like, why drink juice? I don't understand it. You know, like, there's certain foods I'm just like, why? And so she's like, because they put stuff in that's not good for you, and it doesn't leave you satisfied. And I guarantee you, if you start eating full, you'll be fine. And so that's what happened that day. I never had anything light or diet or non-fat or low-fat ever again. And my weight didn't change. But I was certainly more satisfied. and I feel good about it. I'm like, oh, I'm not putting chemicals into my body that I, believe me, I've got chemicals running in and out. My bathroom, my landlord decided to do my bathroom. Tar was in my home, you know, and like, we're all going to die from tar poisoning, you know. But so I definitely have a lot of chemicals in my system. I'm not a pure person. But if I can choose not to put them in my body, I choose not to put them in my body. Because I was addicted to Diet Coke, all that stuff, you know, and it's just not good for me. I don't like it. And so I don't have it. And exercise, I used to be compulsive at the gym. I came into New York. I was at Pineapple Exercise and forever, 3 hours a day, walking around Manhattan. And here I decided when I was 40, so that was maybe even younger. I'm 61 now. So I decided I was never going to get on a treadmill ever again. I was never going to go on one of those climbers. Again, if you do this, I have no go with God. This is just for me. I decided I was going to learn to dance. Just because I wanted to learn to dance. Never danced in my life, and I was like, I'm going to do it because I have a good sense of rhythm. And so I started taking cardio hip-hop and cardio Latin, and I've been doing that forever. And I just found out from reading a piece in a qualified newspaper that Zumba, which is cardio dance, is the best thing for osteoporosis. I was like, what? Yes! I was so excited because I'm like, oh, I've been doing that. So it could have been so much worse. Like, my bones could have been worse. And they're better, and I'm on this stuff that's actually growing some bone, which is next level crazy. And you know, I've had a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, people, I mean, like my whole entire digestive system was messed up from all the laxatives I took. That's been fixed. Yeah, I don't have IBS anymore. Like, all these things that were just, oh, that's just who I am. That's just who I am. I never say that's just who I am anymore because I'm always working on something. And that's, like I said, what I love about this program. Bless you. Whether we come in here, like when I came in here, I was working on staying on my diet because that's the person who got me in here. She said, bless you. She said, if you come to program, they will help you stay on your diet. That's what she told me. She lied. So, but she got me to my first meeting, you know. And so what I wanted to learn at that first meeting, what am I working on? How to stay on my diet forever, you know. And so my goals became different. But I love working on things. I love, I decided, it's so funny, a friend of mine, when we went through this, we're like, we're not going to be mean to our husbands anymore. I'm not mean. And then all of a sudden I was like, maybe I should just go with kindness. Let's try that. So instead of not being mean, go with kindness. And so I've been doing that, and it's different. You know, like when I take the thing away, I have to replace it with something. So when I'm taking the speeding through my life away, what I want to be is more measured. I want to be more gentle. I want to be more graceful. I don't want to stop eating like there's no tomorrow. I want to eat with grace and dignity. I want to eat like a lady. You know, like I don't, it's not like, get rid of all this stuff. And they talk about leaving the hole in the donut. I don't want to be the hole in the donut, so I can't, Michael will appreciate this, play a negative.
It would be greatly appreciated.
May I have a volunteer? Thank you. May I volunteer to read the 12 traditions? Please be quiet while we are reading our traditions. Who would like to do that? Thank you.
Hi, Terrell, compulsive over here.
Hi, Terrell.
One, I come to my question, come first, person recovery, depends on our unity. Two, for our group purposes, of one, also authority, and loving God is the expressing self in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose. The charity message is supposed to be to steal suffers. Six, an OA group I never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name. Continue related facility identifies just comes money, property, and prestige, diverges from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group might be fully self-supporting, declining to ask their contributions. 8, overzealous should remain forever non-professional, but our service and nurse may employ special work. 9, OA as such must be organized. And we may face this board or committee strictly responsible for those things. 10, OA's anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, incidentally, a name never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the press, radio, films, television, and other public media communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions. Everyone rests by principle of reform.
Thank you so much. Okay. Did we read the seventh tradition? Did somebody do that? Did that just happen and I missed it? Yeah, of course it did. Okay, this is the time. Sorry, I'm totally here. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. Okay. Yes.
Hi, I'm Julie. You were talking about always working on something. Do you ever feel like you can overdo the always working on something to kind of distract you from something else that you should be kind of dealing with, or kind of thing, or just overdoing it in general?
Yes. Yes, of course. And that's why I check in with sponsors. And oh, sorry. So the question was, do I ever feel like I'm overdoing it with what I'm working on? Right? It's going. Yes. Yeah? Okay. And so my answer to that is yes, of course. However, when I check in with my sponsor and I'm like telling them what I'm working on and how I'm doing it, she might say, really? Is that the thing that's going to kill you first? and so that's kind of how I judge it. You know, what's the thing that's causing me the most pain? And that's the one that I really need to go to God with. And it takes a while. I've been working on this measure thing for months now. And it's going to be a while. It's been with me my whole life. So it's going to take some time. And I know that, and I like that's the best part of having experience, like long time experience. It always happens. It's always in God's time. If I rush it, it's never going to work.
Hi, thank you so much. Can you talk about the God thing? How that happened and how that became a real thing for you, an agent of change, and it sounds like thoughts too.
So the question was, can I talk about the God thing and when did it happen and how does it work? I'm paraphrasing the question, but that's generally the gist of it. And so for me, I always had a sense of God and angels my entire life. And I remember always feeling I had this angel on my shoulder who just was like killing it for me, you know, like just moving through life really well. And then when I was around 10 or 11, I really felt the angel moved. And my life just got really dark. And I remember at my first OA meeting, it was a beginner's meeting, and I talked about this angel, and it was Q&A, and the leader said, "Who moved?" And I thought, oh my God, I could move away? And I had just completely moved away. And so I started saying the Serenity Prayer. That was my go-to. Anytime I had a food thought, Serenity Prayer. I had books with the Serenity Prayer written over and over and over again because I had to stop the thinking. And so that's when God started to come in through doing that prayer work. And just because I'd already had the experience of knowing a God, it got deeper and deeper and deeper to the point where I'm just like, yeah, we're working on this relationship. Like, this is long term. And now she's in the car with me. That's new. So, yeah, we're hanging out and, you know, It's kind of great. And I'm like, thanks for the space, babe. That's amazing. So it's pretty much in all aspects of my life. It's just a go-to. And every once in a while, of course, I doubt it. And I go, this is a freaking fairy tale. Why am I believing in this? This is nuts. Normal people don't do this. And I'm like, who cares? It works. I don't care. It works for me. People would say to me, you know, unless you diet and exercise and you never have the body you want, it's like, okay, that's right for you. It's not right for me. So I kind of have to break. I have to break what I've been taught and listen to what's in here, and then it's like the world cracks open. The interior world cracks open when I'm in here, and that interior to me is the God world. Ainsley,
can you talk about how you deal with resentment?
Yes, resentments are our number one killer. So they're really challenging, and I've had them for years with people. And I pray, I do the 2-week prayer that they suggest, praying everything you want for them and all of that, which is very challenging. And then I had this weird thing. All of a sudden I was like, oh, I forgot that person. I think the first big amends I made, my father was dying. He died very young. He died at 59. And we had a really challenging relationship. And he was very sick in the hospital. And every time I went in the hospital, he'd scream at me. He was mad because we were all alive and he was dying. And he was very young. So I called my sponsor. I'm like, I can't go in the room. I can't take it anymore. And she said, before you go in the room, write down everything you're grateful for that he has done for you or the traits that he has instilled in you. And I was like, I can do that. And so I wrote this long list. And it was long. And I was like, oh. And I was able to go in that room and just be like, and if I would get upset, I'd leave the room, I'd look at the list. And it allowed me to be with him while he still had the resentment. And then we had an opportunity to talk before he died, where he told me he was not the best dad he could have been. And I said to him, I think you did the best job you could. And there was nothing after that. Like, I was free. I was completely free. I had no resentments against him. And he, I think, watches over my son, quite honestly. We've talked, like, we've had this discussion. I really, truly believe he looks after my son. And he finds me things that are lost in my house because he had a great sense of direction. And he used to yell at me for having no sense of direction. And so now I'm like, hey, Dad, where's the book? And it's always found. It's kind of great. So in death, I love him. I love him. And, you know, I do the columns. What's being threatened? What's my resentment? And then the best part is, what's my part in this? Because once I can see, well, I'm holding on to resentment to a man who's dying. What's that? You know, my in-laws are dying right now, horribly. And I've never gotten along with them. For anybody who's been in these rooms, I've been talking about them for 42 years. I do not get along with them. But they're old and dying. What resentments do I have? I just want them to die peacefully and, like, live out their years as best they can. I don't want to fight anything or anyone anymore. But I think the columns in the big book where I see my part is how I can forgive somebody else. Michael.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for leaving Zoom and coming in person to us. A long time. So your son, you know, it resonated with me. And I have a son that is ill, and through the process of letting go of that and letting his higher power take charge. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Okay. So my son was overweight, and then when he was a junior in high school, he started to lose weight, and he's a good-looking guy, and he got a lot of attention, and he's gay, so he's hitting WeHo, and he was getting a lot of attention from a lot of older men, and, you know, and he loved it to the point where he couldn't stop. So he was vomiting up buckets a day, and the reason I own was buckets because I was buying them.
Yay.
And so it was very grim. He lost over 120 pounds. He's 6 feet tall. I think he was 120 when he went into treatment, and he did a lot better in treatment, and he got better, and he's got his life back. I mean, I don't know if I can even say this. He's a lighting designer for a big place in LA, which is kind of great, and he's just been recruited by some other places, and I'm like, what is going on? Because he couldn't get out of bed, And now he's like at the top of his game. He's going to be 29 on Wednesday. And we didn't think he'd make it to 19. So we have 10 extra years, and it was from working the other program of really letting go, knowing he had a higher power. I wasn't it. And just letting him have the life he could, although we did do an intervention. But after that, like, it's been rough. Like, if you want to talk, it's been rough. Right now, it's great. Like, it's great. I'm taking him out for his birthday on Wednesday, and we're very excited. He, of course, came up with an idea for a restaurant that's $1,000 for two people, and I was like, what planet are you living on? So he's like, well, you didn't think I was going to make it. And I'm like, yeah, not for $1,000. So literally, I was like, yeah, no, that's not happening. But yeah, it is that allowing them to have their higher power. And I know because it can get, I mean, my husband won't go into programs because he doesn't want to hear about dead children. He just won't listen to it. So that's why he never went. But he said he got it through me. So, but that's a kind of separate, same issue. I'm sorry.
You said some great stuff about the leading a fight for God, and specifically you said whatever you're looking for. Could you talk more about that?
I'll do it in 5 minutes. Yeah, I'll do it in one. Because I'm always looking for the answer in the food. Like, if that one more bite is the thing that's going to do it. That extra plate is the thing that's going to do it. And so when I went to single plating, small plating, because I don't need a big plate. Like, my body doesn't need it. It really doesn't. Which I also learned. And I'm not skinny. I have a normal body. Anyway, so what this person said, again, who I didn't like, who I love for saying this, she says, look, you've been like running through that whole plate, you know, and then you're down to the last bite and you're sad. I'm like, I am. I'm really sad. It's the last bite. And she's like, yeah, that last bite isn't going to make you happy. Like, you're not going to get it out of that last bite. And I'm like, yes, I am, you know. And so literally sometimes it's a grain of rice. It's just a reminder that I'm in touch with God at the end of my meal. It's not really about, you know, like, God's not, you better give me some more, bitch. I'm like, no, I'm not. It's mine. But it does, and there's a beginning, a middle, and an end to the meal, because I'm also I was a grazer. So if there's not an end, it's like, well, I guess I could go do that, or, you know. And I don't bring food into my house. It's a problem. I was having trouble with crackers. Who knew? I was just like, those aren't going in the cart. They're just not going in the cart. So, because I don't want to go back to where I was. Did that answer? Yes, Carol.
So, why did you choose to hear your dance class today and come speak?
Because the dance class is always there. It'll be there next Saturday. My weight is not going to change. Because the reason I want to go is to control my weight. Like, I know this, you know. I go 4 days a week, and it's to keep my body a certain way. It also gives me endorphins. I can give you all the reasons, but the truth is, I'm doing it for my body. Now I'm doing it for my bones. So I can say, oh, I'm doing it for my bones. No. And I have to get out of there after an hour. I always want to stay for the second hour. And I'm like, no, no. You're good. You're done. Because there are a lot of people who stay all day long, you know. And I'm like, no. This is better for my recovery. Weight loss is not part of my recovery. Manipulating my body is not part of my recovery. If I start going to 5 or 6 classes a week, I'm in trouble. I know that. So, just because I'm older, my body can't take it. It just can't. I would rather be here. Not every Saturday. I'm not coming back next Saturday. I'm going to my class. But it's my hip-hop class. I'm going. But you know, when I'm asked to lead, because it was given so freely to me, things that I thought were impossible, when I would hear people say, no, you can do this, I'd be like, I don't, what? And they showed me that I could do it. And when I called them, they would say, sweetie, you're fine. This is how it works. It's hard. Give yourself a break. Keep going. just keep showing up. Just keep coming back. That was the one message I heard so clearly, and it's the one thing that I'm really grateful for, because so many people leave. There's so many people in that 100-pounder meeting that are just in and out, gaining and losing hundreds of pounds over the years, and it's because they left. Don't leave. That's the only thing I could say. Like, don't leave. You want to stay healthy. Don't leave. Even if you don't have it, even if the miracle hasn't happened, don't leave before the miracle happens. Emily.
Thank you, Ray. Thank you for talking about the anger and the need to fight. Could you speak a little bit more on what you do in those situations where self-righteous isn't the right word, but I'm right, I want to fight somebody. Could you talk to folks more about how you let that go?
I love self-righteous anger. I could eat it up. I really could. But I know from our literature that it's not good for me, and I know from the experience of having it that it's not good for me. So I literally have had to pray to God. I'm so powerless over this. Literally powerless over it. It's how I was raised. It's what I know. And it was what I was bearing when I didn't speak up. So it's my little person in there is I'm going to speak at everything, You look at me the wrong way. Get your eyes off me, dude. That's what I want to say. And now it's I don't need to do that. I'm safe. They have their own higher power. There's a guy coming to our house, a homeless guy, smashed a bottle on our porch last night of peanut butter and jelly, and I was just like, oh my God. My husband's losing his crap. Just losing his crap. And I'm like, let's just clean it up. Just clean it up. And he's been here. She's been a few times. So, called the police. They're not going to do anything. I have to leave that to my higher power. Because he's like, well, I've got a bat. I'm like, yeah, you're really going to go out there and bat that guy in the head. He thinks he is. Not. Because what's the point? I'm safe in my home. He can't get into my home. I have to keep remembering I'm safe here. I'm safe here. And as long as I have God with me, no matter what happens, I'm still safe. But it's definitely not, it's not mine to get rid of. I don't have that power. It's too hard.
It's 18 seconds.